Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, we'll talk about the best organic gardening methods on how homeopathy helps to grow great gardens.
Who called in?
A show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and international expert agro-homeopath Kavi Raj. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. And I will not be able to be speaking live on the show with our regular co-host, Kavi Raj, who is the author of the international best-selling book, Homeopathy for Farm and Garden, which has already been translated into 7 languages. I'm not also sure whether Dr. Bruck is going to be out of his university classrooms in order to call in today, but sometimes when he has a chance, he does participate as our other co-host. He is a plant pathologist and an expert in global warming. Also, sometimes Mark Moody calls in, who is a biodynamic farmer, but we do not expect him to be calling in today on this special show that I have scheduled regarding radiation poisoning and toxicity. I would like to remind people who are listening that we have 4 shows a week. Monday is learning about homeopathy and studying the Organon of Medicine, which was written by Dr. Samuel Hahnemann. And on Wednesday, we are doing the organic gardening shows, learning about how to live in harmony with the earth in the way that we plant and the way we eat in our concerns. And on Thursday, we are talking with Alan Phillips regarding vaccinations and your rights in the United States. Finally, on Sunday evenings, just before midnight, I do a meditation. Now, I want to apologize. This week, I didn't do the meditation or even Monday's show. I was so busy watching the unfolding events in Japan, the earthquake, the tsunami, the floods, the people being evacuated, and now the nuclear reactions having the steam escape and the explosions, and everyone is watching what's going on. So besides that, I was also traveling and away from the computer. So now that I'm back, we are doing this special because it is touching all of our lives, and even the reporting, which is constant 24/7, and I know I'm watching it. I want to know what's happening. I want to pray for the people that they will be well and safe, but it is impacting our soul. It is impacting our emotions and what we're thinking all the time about feeling safe, about what is happening to our world. And it's such an emotional issue. The loss of lives, it's unfathomable. And so I'm going to start with a thought from Mahatma Gandhi. He said, "Live as if you were to die tomorrow. Learn as if you were to live forever." And we must continue this work in our world. We are the caretakers of our world. We need to know what we are doing. We need to get all of the information that we can and make good decisions. Also, there's a lot of articles, obviously, on the New York Times, and I did recently post a comment on there, and they accepted my comment. It was about the radiation and the nuclear explosion and what's happening to the atmosphere and to the ground level, and to using Geiger counters to see what are the millisieverts that people are receiving this radiation toxicity. So my comment, which they published, is the rescue and recovery teams will be putting their own lives at risk. We are praying for their safety. And a quote from Reinhold Niebuhr, an American theologian who lived in 1892 to 1971, said a very important thought that has been said by millions of people around the world, quote, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I hope that we will be so much wiser after this horrendous event. Of course, natural disaster, it cannot be averted, but we can be prepared and plan and build wisely. And now it is up to us to clean up and to make changes in how we provide energy for the world, how we build buildings, where we decide to build, what is it, where should populations, large populations of people be inhabiting on this earth that are more safe, that will not incur something that is obviously to be expected when you're building populations, civilizations along coastal plains that we know, coastal waters that we know are going to have these influx of waves and of as global warming is more and more prevalent. Okay, so we're going to be reading a piece of information that has been provided by Kaviraj for today's show. And also, I'm going to inform you that on HWC, Homeopathy World Community, I have created a brand new section, an entire category dedicated to these issues, which are going to be long-term. This is going to be not just a one-year event. This is going to be a long-term trauma to populations, to civilizations, and we need to know how to deal with it. So the new category is called earthquake, tsunami, trauma, nuclear radiation. And so far, there are seven major articles here. One of them I've written is called The Use of Iodine to Preserve the Thyroid Health and Protect Against Radiation Poisoning. And so there's a whole bunch of information there. We've got a question from one of our members that wanted to know prevention for the Tokyo Friends and the West Coast USA who will be irradiated from this nuclear reactor and what has happened. I'm going to give you some more current events and details as we go along. Then we have Ingrid from Copenhagen, who is a psychiatrist, psychologist, and is a specialist in trauma victims, traumatization. And she has written an article on the impact onto the psychic structures of traumatization. What do we do when we are in complete shock? And I have a note about that. There was an NPR radio show concerning victims of previous tsunamis and their responses, which are incredible stories to listen to, the persons who have lived through these incredible natural events and traumas to their lives. And to think that, of course, once if you are able to come back into your real self, into your real body, and not have deeper disassociation, how you are able to reach out and love other people. And this was reported. Also, the phenomenon that occurs when you are in the situation, and all of us are watching on television every moment, live, this huge wave coming onto the shore, coming onto the land. We are fixed. We are in trance. We are hypnotized by this incredible phenomena of nature, the awe and power of nature. And it's if you're stuck in your tracks and you can't even move, and you're there watching this event. And it brought to mind, of course, it's not the same thing, Sodom and Gomorrah, how you know that it's going to cause death, you know it's going to be destruction, and she looks back and she has to see what's happening, and she turns into a pillar of salt, standing there frozen in her place. And this is what can happen to us as humans, just our natural tendency to be hypnotized by what we're seeing. And it was just an impact that I wanted to feel, and I wanted to share with my listeners today what is going on. I see that we have quite a few people in the chat room, and I want to remind people that they can participate in today's radio discussion by just going to the blogtalkradio.com Homeopathy World Community website and clicking on the little radio widget there, the play button, and you can listen to what is going on the show and participate in your comments. So we're going to move on to some breaking news. The Japan's, I don't think I finished telling you the other kinds of shows, the other kinds of discussions that are here. Besides Ingrid's about the psychic structures traumatization, there is also an article I have called Haunting Images of Black Rain Radioactive Nuclear Fallout, and I will be posting there some more videos about some other historic events dealing with nuclear fallout. There is also an article written about post-traumatic stress disorder and how we can learn from the most recent earthquake disasters that have occurred. We just had in January, last January, the Haiti earthquake. It's over a year now, and we're still digging out. We're still recovering from that impact on our psyche and that tremendous loss of life and value, property, families, just so much loss and grief. And then we had more recently, the New Zealand earthquake. And I'm just saying, we have these people who are living through it who we can learn lessons from them. How do they recover? How can we recover more quickly from their wisdom? Now we also have Ildigo from Copenhagen. No, she is from, I'm not sure if it's Netherlands or Copenhagen. And she is talking to us and will be posting many articles about the radioactive elements and most likely about Jan Schulten's periodic chart of elements and what we can reap from that bit of knowledge about what's to be expected. What can we see in the response of the human being to these radioactive elements? And finally, there's one more article called Earthquake, Tsunami, Disaster Shock, The Waves of Devastation, and that's more about the tsunami. And I want to thank everyone again for coming in and listening to the show. So the breaking news now is that the Japan's health ministry said on Tuesday it was raising the legal limit on the amount of radiation to which each worker could be exposed to 250 millisieverts from 100 millisieverts, five times the maximum exposure permitted for American nuclear plant workers. Now, we know that they're in the danger zone. There's no question about it. When you think about going in for a chest x-ray or a tooth x-ray, the amount of millisieverts is so much smaller. It's either 0.1 or 4 millisieverts. It's very little comparatively to this. And you know that it builds up over time. It's not something that's just going to go away. Radiation has a half-life, and it can be very long, many, many years of physical side effects. They also say that Daiichi, which is not synonymous with Chernobyl in terms of the severity of contamination. And I'm thinking about it, we've got more than one nuclear plant that is leaking. Okay, Kaviraj is telling me 0.2 probably millisieverts for one of the regular exposures that we have. 100 years from iodine is how long your, if you live 100 years, your thyroid will be waiting for that half-life to dissolve. So we're looking at the long term here, folks. This is not a pretty picture, and we have to know what to do. The Ukrainian reactor blew up and spewed huge amounts of radiation for 10 days in 1986. And you know what? We are still, the Japanese coast is still undergoing aftershocks, trauma, more water. We don't know whether there will be more tsunamis. So basically what we can do is really, if the entire population of the Earth were to pray, we could maybe make some effort of change. I don't know how many people heard that the spin of the Earth has been, rotation of the Earth has been changed due to this impact from the way that the Earth's crust, the layers of the earthquake shift and one fits on top of the other. And they gave an example of the way a skater will put their arms in. And when they put their arms in and come into a tight, smaller space, they will spin much more rapidly. And so the Earth's crust has actually shifted. So among plant employees and firefighters at Chernobyl, many volunteered to try to tame and then entomb the burning reactor. Although it is not clear that all were told the truth about the risks, within 3 months, 28 of them died from radiation exposure. So we're talking here about Chernobyl. At least 19 of them were killed by infections that resulted from having large areas of their skin burned off by radiation, according to a recent report in the United Nations Scientific Committee. And 106 others developed radiation sickness with nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and dropping blood counts that left them highly vulnerable to infections. And those are some of the major symptoms of radiation sickness, and of course leading to cancer. Like the drop in the blood cells and the bone. A small crew of technicians braving radiation and fire became the only people remaining at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power station on Tuesday, and perhaps Japan's last chance of preventing a broader nuclear catastrophe. So the people who are in there now, who are left to try to salvage what they can, are definitely putting life and limb at risk. Japan says that the second reactor may have ruptured with radioactive release. This was news from today, March 16th, 2011. I perhaps started the show and it forgot even to tell you what day it was. The wind and rain steer radiation's reach. And so we're also looking at climate, what is going on. Meteorologists are looking at the weather, at the shift in the air currents, what is going on there. Precautions should limit health problems from nuclear plants radiation. So perhaps because the whole world is looking, our form of communication is so much more sophisticated. We've got Twitter, we've got Skype, we've got people talking on their cell phones. the information hopefully is getting out, and hopefully we will be able to disseminate the information about what homeopathic remedies can do and what kelp can do and what we can do to preserve our thyroid using iodine. There are many, many things and so many more experts in the field now who can inform us and teach us what to do. Experts have long criticized potential weaknesses in the design of Stricken Reactor. So these are all articles that you're going to be able to read online in the news in the coming week, days and weeks, that this is part of the fear and why probably nuclear proliferation, development of more nuclear power as energy is probably going to be less primary now. And the reason is people cut corners. There's corruption. There's all sorts of biases and lobbyists and who knows what. And that's why when we build, we're not really 100% safe. So we have to think about those things. Then we have The Certainties of Modern Life Upended in Japan is another article, and a green blog, Questions on the Nuclear Crisis in Japan. There are going to be many, many articles written, especially with the upcoming Earth Day in April. We need to think about our Mother Earth. So there are many, many things that I am hoping all of you out there on the blogs and reading these articles will comment on the news sites. And it's good because we need to vent our concern. We need to vent our worry and come together as a world population. So we have here a little report about those who are at the site. And it says, quote, they crawl through labyrinths of equipment in utter darkness, pierced only by their flashlights, listening for periodic explosions as hydrogen gas escaping from crippled reactors ignites on contact with air. And Adilko, oh, she's from Hungary, excuse me, she is from Hungary. She will be writing about hydrogen and how that is on the periodic chart. The people who are in there, they breathe through uncomfortable respirators or carry heavy oxygen tanks on their back. Kaviraj has just reported that 50 workers have left. I do not see how anybody can remain at the site because it's totally inundated with radioactive material. They are just sacrificing themselves to this event. I mean, it is an effort to try and save what is possible. They wear white, full-body jumpsuits with snug-fitting hoods that provide scant protection from the invisible radiation sleeting through their bodies. And also, you have to remember that the radiation, it's not just putting on a face mask. It's not going to cut it, and because it goes right in through the skin, right into the body, into the cells. They are faceless 50. Okay, so in the report that I'm reading from, it says that there were 50 workers, and Kaviraj is saying that these are the folks who have now left the site. Now we're going to talk about the reactor type and the fuel rods. We're going to examine the type of reactor involved so that we shall have a good understanding of the requirements for detoxification, and also there will be a timeline of the developments. Fukushima number 3 uses MOX, a different plutonium-based fuel, to the low-enriched uranium oxide fuel for which most nuclear reactors was designed. MOX, MOX fuel, tends to run hotter because of the lower thermal conductivity, which may be an issue in some reactors' designs. For example, the use of MOX does change the operating characteristics of the reactor, and the plant must be designed or adapted slightly to take it. More control rods are needed. Okay, so we know that MOX needed even more precautions, and emergency cooling systems were not in place enough to handle this event. And Kaviraj asks, who approved this design? Are there any similar plants using MOX now? That is a very good question. If anybody has that information, please let us know. The meltdown and the causes and results. There is a possibility, quote, this is Toshihiro Benai, says, there is a possibility, we see the possibility of a meltdown. Director of the agency's International Affairs Office in a telephone interview from the headquarters in Tokyo. And we know that there is radiation in Tokyo also at this time. At this point, we have still not confirmed that there is an actual meltdown, but there is a possibility. The question I always ask myself is, they tell us a line, and what line do we believe? Kaviraj says, shower and do not wash, otherwise you rub it in the skin. Yes, in the United States, we do have to worry for sure along the West Coast in Hawaii and along South, Central and South America. This is coming this way. MOX reactors are in the United States as well. So a meltdown is a catastrophic failure of the reactor core with the potential for widespread radiation release. And we know that has already happened days and days ago. We saw they released steam that was irradiated, that had material that could irradiate the population. That, you know, we're not just talking about humans. We're talking about this radiation going in the air, coming down, going on the plants, going into the earth, into the groundwater. There's nothing that can escape from this type of event. Though Benai said that the engineers have been unable to get close enough to the core to know what's going on, he based his conclusion on the fact that they measured radioactive isotopes in the air on Saturday night, and it is now Tuesday. So many days later, we know that there has been a release of radioactive isotopes. Quote, what we have seen is only the slight indication from a monitoring post of cesium and iodine. Since then, plant officials have injected seawater and boron into the plant in an effort to cool its nuclear fuel and stop any reactions. So we're now going to be looking at cesium, iodine, boron, plutonium, uranium, hydrogen. These are going to be elements we're going to be taking a closer look at in the weeks to come as we have the shows. It looks like Dr. Bob is on the line with us. Let me check if he has called in. We have people called in. Okay. Hello, Dr. Bob.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm just talking away, and we've got a lot of people on the chat today. Somebody else called into the line, but I don't know who it is. If someone from the chat has called in, please let me know who you are so that way I can decide whether we're going to open up the line for you to give us some information, your take on it, or whatever. We have been just informed from Kavi that the 50 workers who were trying, who were risking life and limb, have left the plant. So now we're talking about, we're on to, well, I was kind of mentioning, am I going to believe what rhetoric is being or what information is being disseminated to the people to through the media? Are the spokes?
Well, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't. Well,
I would not.
Of course they have to say certain words in order to keep anxiety level, a panic. You know, they're trying to keep the people calm. And we saw the Japanese people are just a truly, truly amazing characteristics that they have. They showed
they're stoic.
They're stoic. They're calm in the face of danger, and they showed this event occurring, the tsunami and the earthquake, in a graduation ceremony for an entire auditorium of Japanese people. And the person up front in the auditorium said, stay calm, stay in your seats. And as they did, the ceiling fell down on them. So, you know, again, I will go to, because people don't know what to do in the face of danger in this type of a situation, I can repeat again Reinhold Niebuhr's saying, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. But not only the wisdom to know the difference, the wisdom to know what to do in an event. And that is what we are learning here through
here we have a problem, though, okay? I'm reading the latest news flash coming out of the Associated Press.
Okay.
That the head of the International Atomic Energy Commission has confirmed that this morning three of the nuclear reactors are in partial meltdown at this time.
Right, I know
that. Partial meltdown means is that they are releasing cesium and radioactive iodine into the atmosphere as well as the water. You have to remember these plants are right on the seashore, okay?
Right.
I fully understand the idea of crisis management, and I fully understand the idea that you do not want people panicking. On the other hand, there are immediate things that can be done, such as the ingestion of potassium iodide pills by the people within, not in the United States. That's nonsense, okay?
Right.
Okay, that's fear-mongering to tell people, you read the article from the paper this morning, that people in California are panicking.
Oh,
they're selling pills for $100 a canister.
They are?
For $2 pills. Sure, they're on the street, they're ripping people off. Because
that's
people
horrible.
Are panicking, and it is wrong to start insinuating that people right now in the United States have any reason to be panicking. On the other hand, the thing that is very disconcerting, and the news media has picked this up, is Tokyo Power and Electric, who owns this Fukushima plant, is not leveling with their own people. That is the problem.
They're not telling them to take these potassium iodide?
They are not telling them the truth. They are not evacuating the area properly. And they are not literally giving them updated information. It's my understanding that
I thought they said that they were handing out iodine pills to everybody in the entire region.
Well, I haven't read that, and they should be for free, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But the point is that from now until Saturday morning, the synoptic forecast is that the plume from the meltdown will go out to sea, which is the best possible scenario. According to the synoptic forecast, beginning on Saturday morning, Japan time, that's a half a day before us, obviously, okay, that the winds are going to start sweeping in from the southeast and carrying that plume directly into Tokyo Bay. And if that is true, there should be a response for it now, not telling people maybe, if, or whatever. They might need to open up air raid stations underground. They're going to have to find ways. I mean, it sounds trite, but literally by having people stockpile food, stay in their apartment buildings, taping shut their doors, taping shut their windows, okay?
They did tell them
aerosols.
To do that.
They are particulates, okay?
They told them to go into their home.
They have to seal themselves in.
Well, you know, it's very strange. I mean, they're asking you to seal yourself in your home without water, without food. How are you going to survive?
You can't. You cannot do it that way.
Well, that's what they've asked them to do.
Well, they're wrong, because right now you have 3 days to have an airlift to be able to get as many people into a safe situation as possible. And even if it doesn't happen, you're better safe than sorry. Right now, they are basically shooting craps with the entire population of the island of Japan.
Well, let me give you this information. There's a couple of voices here. We've got on the chat on HWC, Art Arc Light says that this person is asking me not to do sweeping generalizations about people's reactions to viewing the events in Japan. I hope people didn't feel that way. I was giving my personal viewpoint and how I was reacting personally, and I
how
could,
were you reacting?
I was reacting, and I was giving a story about a person who was in a trance. As this was a surfer who was on a surfing expedition last year, and he was swept up in the tsunami, and he just stood there frozen in his tracks, looking
yep.
at this from horizon to horizon, the wall of the wave. And he just looked out. Instead of running away, instead of moving to higher ground, instead of taking action, he just stood there and sort of like, wow, look at that. And
yeah.
that was kind of, I feel the same way myself, because why am I sitting there hour after hour listening to the news and watching repeatedly over and over again every different video there is
right.
showing the tsunami and the destruction and
the reality is you shouldn't. CNN what? And everybody else, they repeat it because that's their job.
It's
okay?
their job,
but there's a
but
certain amount of sensationalism, but it can become very depressing.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say, that by having the news repeatedly over and over in our face, we are having an emotional impact to our being, even though we're not even there. We're sharing in this consciousness and this universal energy of trauma, really.
Well,
and
I was in it, okay? And,
that's right.
You know,
you did
I was in the Galapagos, and we were hit by a tsunami. And at the time, it was very exciting, but I've spoken to several of my students this morning that are very depressed.
Uh-huh.
They have the equivalent of PTSD.
Right.
Okay. It's after the fact. They're survivors. Nobody was hurt by the wave that hit Puerto Ayaro in the Galapagos where we were. And we were evacuated to the volcanoes. But the bottom line is now that it's over, and they realize, particularly watching TV like you're doing, over and over, watching hundreds of thousands of Japanese suffering, they're becoming very, very depressed about it, and there certainly is a physical and mental toll that's paid.
Yes, and to realize that their life could have been affected. And so people don't know that during Friday, through you just got home late last night, that you were in Ecuador, and even though it's far from Japan, they were having these tidal waves, the aftershocks from the tsunami, and they evacuated the area where you were.
Well, I was in the Galapagos specifically, which of course is a low-lying island archipelago, and I was on the largest island with the largest population, 22,500, and the government put in a call to completely evacuate the island to the highlands, and they commandeered our bus. And the Navy and the Coast Guard were there, and it was like a refugee site. I mean, basically, you were talking about the roads being filled with people walking with their kids and their animals and their furniture on their back to escape. And, you know, even though nothing devastating happened, we were hit by a 3-meter wave that wiped out the ocean front. A hospital was put out of commission. The grid failed. The electric grid failed, and, of course, the storefronts along the beach were completely inundated, but nobody was killed, and, yes, there was some damage, and so we escaped. It was no big deal, but still emotionally, when you realize any type of a global disaster like this, emotionally it does affect you, no question about it.
Yes. So also, this person on the Homeopathy World Community is answering one of the questions, and I actually had read about this. When we asked who approved the nuclear power plant construction in Japan, she says that she has heard that after World War II, that the United States forced Japan to accept these General Electric nuclear plants. So they were built by GE, and
yep.
There's probably a lot more written about it on the internet.
GE and Westinghouse are the two major providers of nuclear power in the world. These are called Mark I's. They were built a long time ago. These are very old plants. And,
yes,
you know,
and
of course,
42 years ago or something.
That's correct. And basically what they're saying on the TV now is, well, you don't have to worry about the new plants in the United States because we have updated technology. Well, I got bad news for you. There are 104 nuclear plants in the United States, and
yeah,
three-quarters of them are over 40 years old.
Uh-huh. So they're going to be taking a close look at this.
I hope.
The person, they said that the condition with which the United States were to give help in the reconstruction after World War II was to install these nuclear power plants there.
Right.
And we understood that at the time it seemed perfectly sound reasoning that for clean energy to a population that you don't want to have, that has limited energy resources.
They have no energy resources.
So now we're picking up the pieces.
The point is, and I am an administrative judge for the NRC, and the thing that has to be emphasized constantly, and it is a major problem that we are dealing with in this country and worldwide, is that there is no such thing as perfect security. It doesn't exist. For anyone to say that nuclear power plants are completely safe is nothing other than an abject lie. Additionally, the fact that there are places in China, in the United States, along the entire ring of fire, meaning the entire ring of the Pacific Ocean in particular, that extends over into the Indian Ocean, okay, along the coast of the Indian Ocean, the Bay of Bengal, there are huge fault zones. And, you know, the idea that we could place something as heinous as a nuclear power facility in which we say, oh, there's nothing to worry about, we have models that show it could survive a earthquake, it could survive a terrorist attack, frankly, in my opinion, and that's all it is, I'm not speaking for anybody other than myself, is an abject lie. There is no such thing as total security. We have four power plants in California that are within eyeshot of the San Andreas Fault. Okay, those things, again, they don't blow up, they melt down. A lot of people do not understand. They think there's an explosion. There is no explosion. It is not an atomic bomb. The core melts. It melts into the ground. All the radioactive material contacts water, and a gas goes up, primarily of radioactive iodine and radioactive cesium, both of which will kill you outright and or give you cancer. And if people are not made aware of that, they are being told a lie.
Okay, so now we have a question in the chat room, and we're going to get to answer those questions. This was a show specifically about radioactive toxicity and poisoning and what kinds of steps that we can do. We do know that there is continued risk to about further explosions, and What's the answer to that?
Well, do we have any homeopaths there that have any good
suggestions? I'm going to be providing this information.
Okay.
This is information that Kaviraj has prepared. Plus, there are a number of articles on the website that can give further information on the Homeopathy World Community.
So what kind of prophylaxis is there?
Okay, so we can determine which is the best remedy to use for radiation sickness. And it will be, Kaviraj is saying plutonium nitricum is the closest similimum. And I know you're going to be hearing quite a few other bits of information and methods that people are going to want to talk about to use. So you're going to hear a lot on the internet. Other remedies useful for radiation sickness include radium bromatum, which is one that I used for radiation toxicity from radiation treatment for cancer, uranium nitricum, plutonium nitricum, and x-ray. He did not list cadmium sulf, which is also another good one. You use low potencies, and you dilute this homeopathic remedy in water and give daily as a repetition during the time of exposure. Of course, those remedies must be prescribed on individuality. It is either or, not and. So what he means by that is you don't make up a whole bucket and throw it all in and take all of them. You're going to try
what about, protecting the thyroid?
Well, we have potassium. I think Dana Ullman has been talking about caliiodatum, which is potassium iodine. So we're going to be talking about a number of these kinds of remedies. So we've got iodine supplements will prevent radiation from binding to your cells because the iodine will bind first. So it's sort of like you have a space that you're a lock and a key, and you're going to put that, fill that lock with the key of the iodine so that the radioactive iodine that comes into the environment, which you breathe in or comes through your skin or whatever, or is not going to be able to fill that space because you've already filled it with the key of the neutral iodine. So
okay,
the iodine.
We have a bunch of questions on the chat room.
Okay, hold on. Let's see what we've got. We've got the person who was asking about talking about what actions we can take, and that's what we're talking about right now. She's talking about actions in terms of building plants, I guess, things that plants that are all nuclear power plants that are already established in the United States. There's one in New York City. I know that's also on a fault line. I think that they're going to be reevaluating and going in to see what can be done in these older plants. Okay.
Yeah, I just have a quick comment for Artka about the comments that I made. If you are looking for a decrease in the influence of corporate greed and state corruption in energy decisions, again, speaking for myself as a professional environmental scientist, you better find another planet to live on. I was just reading in Science Today, which is what we scientists read, about how, remember a thing called the Gulf of Mexico you might have heard about with an oil spill? Well, basically, the oil companies are cutting off oil research access to the sites, and even that is still going on, which of course pales into significance of what's going on. Energy is one of the largest businesses in the world. One example is that ExxonMobil had corporate profits of over $148 billion last year. It is corrupt, and I would not believe anything coming out of it, and that's why these international oversight agencies are so vital in these particular cases.
Okay,
that's my two cents on that, and apparently Kavi said that his article is answering the other questions about what
to
do.
Yeah, that's what
I'm.
That's what we're talking about right
go
now.
Ahead, go ahead.
So, Arc Light, we're going to be doing the iodide supplements, and also, this is another big thing that people may not know, begin 2 days ahead of exposure, if possible,
yes,
to take megavitamins, vitamin C. And someone also
antioxidant,
and somebody recommended clay. Potassium iodide in material doses as a supplement should also be adequate to protect the thyroid. And further,
okay, so
there's
that's
another
question I have. The question I have is that you could take the regular potassium iodide pills. It doesn't have to be homeopathic.
That's right.
That's right.
You're going to take material pills. And then there's also the supplement, which is a periodic chart element, selenium, can be used also, that's connected to the thyroid. And we are, as homeopaths, are very familiar with using selenium for prostate cancer.
Right.
So that is useful for those who are living further away. Those who are already exposed in Tokyo Bay, the above remedy should be taken first, and then this recommendation should be supplemented. And, of course, the best thing is to try and get a matching remedy homeopathically. Thyroid reactions that could possibly happen. No, it does not. Kaviraj, do you want to explain further on there? Anyone with hyper or hypothyroidism due to radiation needs to redouble their efforts to rapidly cleanse the system. And I've got another article on HWC from my good friend Phyllis Georgic, and I think she's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who does a lot of clearing of people's toxicity and uses things like walnut beverage, which has a high amount of selenium in it. Okay, we're listing the recommendations, Liz. Anyone with hyperhypothyroidism due to radiation needs to redouble their efforts to cleanse the system. The thyroid gland is key to overall health, produces T3 and T4 hormones, the iodine atoms. Iodine helps regulate metabolism in the body. Thyroid synthesizes vital T3, which is rare, from T4, which is plentiful. The body needs 150 milligrams per day. That's 80% comes from the T4 conversion to T3 in the liver. The pituitary gland also plays a role in thyroid function by moderating the production of both T3 and T4 iodine atoms. Okay, so you want me to go back and look at the recommendations as opposed to, nutrients and supplements available. Because we only have, let's see how much time we've got, about 7 minutes left. Iodine. Himalaya salt contains iodine in proportional trace elements, trace amounts, with other 70-plus trace minerals, raw kelp, seaweed, which one can combine with meals several times per week. Make sure the source of the seaweed is clean, because we know that anything floating in the ocean can be contaminated with heavy metals, so you need to find a good source for seaweed tablets from the sea and not from a lake that has natural iodine too. Okay, and then we have essential fatty acids, which include fish oil, so we've got the fish oil, cod liver oil, and the flaxseed oil. If there are folks who have difficulty consuming the fish oil and get a bad reaction, and then flaxseed oil would be a alternative mode. There's borage and black currant oil. Then I spoke a little bit earlier about antioxidants, which helps to convert the T4 and the T3 atomic elements. So then
I have a question for Kavi.
Yes.
If Kavi is listening, I'm reading an article again from the Associated Press here that if we end up having a nuclear cloud going anywhere, I'm not going to say the United States, but that's, of course, the immediate direction that it would be heading across the Pacific, that sodium bicarbonate, is basically a protective mechanism for the kidneys due to the fact that the bicarbonate ion, mixes with uranium and cesium to form uranium carbonate or cesium carbonate, which can then be released through the kidneys rather than being stored in the body. I've never heard this before. Is there any truth behind that, Kavi, of taking supplements of sodium bicarbonate, or is there a homeopathic remedy that would do a similar type of thing to activate the kidneys to excrete anything that comes in terms of uranium or cesium?
It looks like Kaviraj is going to be answering that question. I know that there are many physicians who are working with this sodium bicarbonate.
I never heard that before. What's
yes,
the story with that?
It's used quite a bit. And there are specialists. Obviously, we know that sodium bicarbonate baking soda is used as a cleanser in our homes, as a neutral cleanser, but it also helps clean the body. And we use it for our body, for our teeth, for all sorts of things. So it can be used. And we'll probably have to do a show regarding that.
No, it sounds interesting, because what they're talking about here is a very specific chemical reaction binding uranium and cesium that's taken in primarily, again, through the lungs or skin. That's when you'd be breathing these aerosols that would be coming in if it makes it that far. But, of course, this is exactly the kind of information that should be given out in Japan right now for obvious reasons, that they're not a matter of if. It's only a matter of when.
And one of the great things about sodium bicarbonate, it's very much available. It's very inexpensive.
And so
he says it is a kidney activator. Let's finish up because we have a couple of minutes left to today's show, and I want to finish listing some more of these supplements that can be used. We've got zinc. Besides the selenium, which is an antioxidant, we've got zinc, which stimulates the pituitary and signals the thyroid to make more thyroid hormones. We've got vitamin D3, which is a steroid hormone necessary for thyroid production. And we have vitamin E, tocopherol. And I wanted to make a note about the vitamin E because I think it was, might have been Ildikó in Budapest, Hungary, who says that vitamin E on the skin, remember, people can have burns, horrible radiation burns. Vitamin E through the skin can be an incredible protector and healer. So just putting that on the skin itself.
Well, that's an antioxidant also.
And then we've got a message on the chat that says Mark Circus suggests sodium bicarbonate. He is a medical practitioner in Brazil. And there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be giving us information in the coming weeks. L-tyrosine, amino acid precursor to T4, and CoQ10, which I know I take every day. It's a heart muscle supplier. CoQ10 is a very good protector of your heart. We've got spectrum of amino acids which act synergistically. Then we've got the regular antioxidants. We mentioned selenium. There's alpha-lipoic acid and grapeseed extract. There's progesterone, which also helps the thyroid gland. And there's several ways best to chelate accumulated heavy metals out of the body. And I want to make a note about chelation. We've had Dr. Manfred Mueller on a previous show. He's going to be on again. And this is his specialty, cleaning the body from heavy metals, toxicities, and vaccinations. And you have to be very, very careful about chelation, about doing it properly, about having a counselor, a guide who is expert in chelation, knowing how to help you so that it doesn't go in a wrong direction. And the suggested activating supplements for chelation are activated charcoal, chlorella, zeolite rock powder, kale, and cilantro. So some of these I naturally eat every week anyway. Kale is a delicious, wonderful vegetable, and so is cilantro. Let's see, we've got 1 minute left.
Lynn Brandegee just put up an interesting comment.
Don't have any time left.
Okay.
So you do have to be discerning about the sodium bicarbonate and learn how to do it.
Well, sodium is going to raise high blood pressure, too.
Okay, well, the time is up. It's going to shut us down. We've got 9 seconds left. I want to add Dr. David Brownstein. His name and website is linked onto HWC. He is going to be the prominent person that people are going to be watching and listening to. So I want to thank everyone today for tuning in. It was a great show, and we'll be back on. We'll let you know about it. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens with co-hosts Kaviraj Vaikuthanath and Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to get some sunshine and light up your life in your garden.